Hello, Fuji lovers. Another episode of Fuji Love Podcast is here. And today, Jens Krauer is having an extremely vibrant and interesting conversation with Bobby Lane. Bobby is an official Fujifilm ex-photographer, an award-winning commercial photographer specializing in creative portraits on location and in the studio. With more than 35 years of photographic career behind her, Bobby has a lot to talk about, and together with Jens, they are expanding on the topic of Bobby's latest article for Fujilove magazine, where she discussed the role and place of women in today's photography world. Enjoy their excellent conversation. Today's episode of Fujilove Podcast is brought to you by Alien Skin, makers of Exposure X3, the advanced photo editor. I have been now using Exposure for several months and I couldn't be more happy. The way it treats Fujifilm files and the quality of its RAW conversion is just excellent. Alien Skin has just recently announced the Exposure X3 complete workflow update and introduced such new features as HSL tools for detailed color adjustment, printing, and support for more Fujifilm cameras and lenses. They also added 15 new Fujifilm simulation presets that mimic the in-camera simulations. So make sure you test Exposure X3 yourself. You can download a free trial from alienskin.com, and if you decide to purchase it, make sure you use the coupon code FUJILOVE and you will save 10%.
Welcome to the Fujilove podcast. Today's episode I'm actually really excited about. We're talking to Bobby Lane, which is a workshop instructor, an award-winning commercial photographer, and over 35 years in the business of photography as a woman. And today we'll talk about what it actually means to be a woman in photography, and especially being a woman in photography a long time ago when things were different. Hey, Bobby, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Jens. Thanks so much. I'm really happy to be here and very excited to be talking about this topic.
Great. Can I just ask you in the beginning, I usually ask everybody, who is Bobby Lane?
I'm a commercial portrait photographer, but I've done everything. I've shot everything from vans and buses and 3,000 square foot studios to Mattel toys. Started off as a large format product photographer in the studio and gradually became a location photographer and then more into portraits. It's always a process. It's never there, right? Things change. But I'm also a really dedicated photo educator. That is my true calling in life. I am just blessed to be able to get ideas across to help other people become better photographers. I don't try to train them to be like me, but to give them tools and techniques and ideas and concepts so that they can find their way better. And I also lead photo tours all over the world and teach workshops. I love light, I love life, and I love people.
Well, that's a great quote. I love light and I love life. That sounds amazing. Have you always been an educator, or has this been like gradually growing besides your professional undertakings?
Well, that's pretty interesting. When I first was in photography school, a friend of mine in the school started to teach a beginning photography class for a local camera club. And I went with them a couple of times and really enjoyed it. And then, strangely enough, I ended up teaching beginning photography at the Boston Center for Adult Education when I was just out of photography school. I was the youngest person in the class. I was 20 years old or 21 years old and teaching, and I really loved it. But at that point, I was moving and shifting and ended up going to California, where I ended up in Los Angeles, and I taught at a two-year professional photography school for about a year and a half. And that's when I really discovered my love of teaching. I just completely fell in love with it. I rewrote the curriculum for the school. I was the director of education by the time I was 24. I was a little young to be doing that, but the school was really behind. But during that time, I could not shoot. There was no time for me to shoot. And I'm a photographer. I must go create. I must go shoot. Besides the fact, I think we've all had those teachers somewhere along the line that really haven't done anything in 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years. So they're teaching you what they used to know. And I swore that as an educator, I would never, ever be that person. So I quit the photography school, opened my studio in Los Angeles, and I didn't teach for 9 years. I did nothing for 9 years. Then I started teaching at UCLA Extension, teaching lighting techniques at my studio. And then from there, it just took off. I just been teaching it at different photo workshops around the United States, like Santa Fe, the Palm Beach workshops, International Center of Photography, the Main Media workshops, the Julia Dean, which is now Los Angeles Center of Photography, a bunch of places, as well as leading the travel tours. This is going to be kind of like the prelude to this, but it was really interesting that when I was teaching for UCLA Extension and teaching lighting techniques, I would have 25 people in the class. I taught all the classes at my studio with my equipment. And I would only have three or four women because in the 80s, women still weren't considered to be technical enough to learn lighting. Obviously, that changed, thankfully.
Today, you can balance education and your photography. So this like 50-50 or how does that look?
I'm doing more education than I am shooting. But I'm still always shooting, whether I'm working on clients or I do a lot of corporate work. So I do a lot of pictures for websites, for companies' websites. I do environmental portraits. I still do some editorial. I don't do any advertising anymore. I just kind of gave up because I just didn't care that much anymore on advertising. You know, like taking a picture of this microphone is not the most important thing in the world. So I stepped back from that. But most of what I do is education. I also do a lot of personal projects. A lot of my friends are musicians and I'm musical. So I photograph musicians quite a bit. I do a lot. I do a lot of different kinds of things. But still primarily education. I'd probably say 65 to 70% education and the other 30% is still shooting.
Let's dive a little bit into your article because as you mentioned how your life looks today, actually that wasn't such an easy way to get there as far as I read your article.
No, it was not. Not at all.
The first point I'd like to dive in is you start the article with writing about how your mother brought up her daughters and that she actually wanted you to have the best education that you can have and that you went along in your childhood with the understanding that you can actually do anything you want. But as you arrived in junior high school, you were confronted with the reality not only of men, but also of women who didn't believe in the same attitude. Can you let us know how this happened a little bit and what your reflections were in that time as you came to the conclusion that you would go straight forward?
It is actually really pretty interesting. My parents were, my mother was 46 and my father was 45 when I was born. So they were already like two generations older than me and they had a much bigger grasp on life. And my father was a very masculine man, very strong. And my mother was, you know, intelligent and she was the head nurse at the hospital. They never thought anything about either my sister and I not being able to do something because we were female. It just wasn't a concept that ever came up. And I was a bit of a tomboy when I was young. I mean, I liked to climb trees and do all that kind of stuff. I wasn't big on the dolls. But my dad never said anything to me that I couldn't go fishing or I couldn't go ride horses or I couldn't go climb trees or as well as my mother. You know, my mother was just always very supportive. But my father was like, hey, if you want to do it, just go do it. So when I got to junior high school, that's when I started really getting confronted. And it's interesting that the women confronted me just as much as the men did. I should say girls and boys. You know, the boys obviously were threatened by the fact that I was strong, both, you know, physically and being able to have a brain in my head. And the women had all been trained to just say, oh, no, this is women's place and this is what they should do. And quite honestly, most of my friends in my life until I got into college were men. Because I didn't like that about women. I didn't like that playing games or manipulating or not being who you were, but having to play this role because that was what was expected of you or that's how you snabbed a man or something like that. I was thoroughly disgusted by that. So my first confrontations were very hard to take, and it took me a while to really understand what it was that was happening. I couldn't understand why I was getting this attitude. But my parents were, again, very supportive, and they just reinforced with me that it wasn't a problem. So I just went ahead and did what I was going to do. And if people didn't like it, then they didn't like it. It wasn't really about me. Although, you know, when you're a teenager, that kind of still bothers you. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't going to not be who I was or not explore or understand or create because somebody else thought that girls can't do that.
Which I think is remarkable because it was not quote-unquote normal at the time. So How did you then decide to become a photographer, which was, again, a business where apparently women were not really welcome at the time?
Well, you know, interesting, when I first got into photography, it was because of the creative side. I wasn't thinking about it as a business. I, you know, fell in love with Ansel Adams along with Minor White and Irving Penn and, you know, all of the greats of the time that I just was in love with what they did. And I loved shooting landscapes and things. And I shot a little bit of people when I was starting out, but not really. But I was more interested in it as an art form in the beginning and making beautiful images than I was thinking about it as a business. It really wasn't. I went to college and I was studying writing and pretty much, you know, I was interested in writing and music and drama and photography, and I studied a little bit of everything. And then after 2 years of college, I said, photography is it. And then that's when I went to New England School of Photography. And at the time, that's the first time that I thought about it as a business instead of an art form. And I found that I really enjoyed the studio and creating still lifes out of nothing, creating images out of nothing. So that was my first real thought about the business. And interesting enough, this was in 1974 or 75. And there was, I would say, a third of the school were women at that time, which was, I think, the very, very beginning of the change, because it was still considered to be a man's profession mostly. But then again, women could be artists, but they couldn't be business people. That was still kind of the idea that was coming across.
Well, interesting, but still a third is quite a high number for the fact that you still had to kind of struggle to really get out there as a woman.
Yes, that's true.
Actually, there's a man in your life that seems to be quite important, which is Bill Sumner.
Yes.
Where you started learning photography, and you mentioned that he was totally open to women becoming photographers. Like, how difficult was it then after school to really get into the craft and also find men who were willing to support women?
I had a lot of naivete that I still thought that I could go and do things and that people wouldn't think anything of it. And since Bill was so open, Bill and his assistant, Jim Raycroft, the two of them are still very, very dear friends of mine, and both of them fantastic photographers. They were very busy. And so they went to the school. Bill had actually taught at the school, and Jim had graduated the year before me. And they said, you know, we need some people to come and help us out in the studio, and just people to come down a couple hours, you know, once or twice a week. They won't get paid, but they'll get experience. And, you know, we think that women, you should invite women, because we don't think that women get enough opportunity to come into the studio. So they sent down myself and another woman and one other guy. And the two women, the two of us, stayed on. And then Ellen actually went off on her own. And then I stayed and eventually became Bill's first assistant when Jim decided to go out on his own. So Bill was completely open. Bill and Jim both never had anything in their brain that said a woman couldn't do this, or a woman could only be a baby photographer, let's say. They were like, you know, we were doing 8x10s, 4x5, still lifes. We were shooting furniture catalogs. We shot all kinds of stuff that, you know, nobody thought about a girl can't shoot this. So I didn't run into that with them until that story that I wrote in the article about one of Bill's biggest clients that had seen me working for 6 months for Bill, setting everything up, shooting all the Polaroids, putting everything together while he and Bill sat there and drank coffee and chatted. And then one day we're sitting and having lunch, and he looked at me and he said, "So what do you do? Do you work in the darkroom?" And it's kind of like, I'm looking, he was an ex-Marine. I'm looking at his face going, "You've seen me work for the last 6 months. Yet somehow, even though you've seen that, you can't quite believe that a woman can set up a still life and the lighting and do all this. And so you think that the only thing I do is work in the darkroom?" I was flabbergasted. And I suppose that's the thing that broke me out of my being so naive, was really being aware that a lot of people had that attitude. And, you know, you never really know how many people do have that attitude at that time.
So I imagine that was not a one-time occasion. You must have run into that several times.
Well, you know, that's very interesting. My husband, Lee Varis, and I were just talking about this before we started this. And you know, at the time when I was back, when I went to Los Angeles and opened my studio, you know, I would go out and show my portfolio and make marketing calls and have, you know, portfolio reviews. And you know, you don't know why you don't get a job. Nobody's ever going to tell you why you don't get the job. you know, is it pricing? Is it this? Is it you weren't the right style for what it was they were looking for? Or was it because I was a woman? I don't know. I worked hard to go out and get the work that I did. And I had a group of people that I worked with that obviously had no problem hiring me to shoot product photography, even though I was a woman. But quite honestly, I really have no idea. I would venture to say that, and this is just a guess, I would venture to say that I probably didn't get jobs somewhere between 20 and 30% of the time because I was female and they didn't think that females were capable.
That's crazy. Which also brings me to the point in your article where you mentioned that at some point it seems like the pressure, or at least the constraints of being a woman, or the negative sides of being a woman in the business at the time, were so high that you thought about giving yourself a non-gender specific name in order to break through clients.
That was actually when I was very first starting out. When I was working with Bill in the studio, you know, I'm Bobby Lane, and I had, you know, in those days we had transparencies and we had stamps made with our name and the copyright on it. And I had mine to say B Lane. So it was all one word. It was just Blaine. And I thought, well, if I do that and I show my work, I send my portfolio out for people to look at, they're not going to know whether I'm male or female. So I'm not going to run across this. But once I actually did set up my own studio in Los Angeles, I just went as Bobby Lane and just went forward. Although, you know, there is that other story where, you know, this client, a freelance producer hired me, and the owner of the company thought that Bobby Lane was a man, and then was completely and totally appalled when I walked in the door.
Which is also a great story that you mentioned in the article, because let me just quickly read that. Apparently you set up everything, you were ready to shoot, and then the client seems to have contacted your producer, and the conversation that you mentioned in the article is the following. The client says, "That's a woman." Jim laughingly says, "No joke." Client: "Woman can't shoot product." Jim confused, "Why not?" Client: "They are not tough enough." Jim bursting out laughing, "Oh, you have no idea." So I really love that story. And I'm wondering, how important was it that you had a network also of men backing you up at the time and supporting you in going forward?
I think it's very important. Obviously, when you're in an industry, you get to know a lot of people. And I knew other photographers belonging to organizations, to photo organizations, as well as, you know, producers and clients, and, you know, people get together and you meet people. And I think it was extremely important. I had several other times, you know, I could tell stories forever, but I had several other times where I think that I was belittled or demeaned because I was a woman and that they didn't take me as seriously. But my attitude, really, quite honestly, my attitude at the time was, you know, there's other clients out there. I'm just going to go work with the people who do appreciate what I do and don't have a problem with this. And I'm going to continue to run into this. I just, in some ways, it's just kind of like you toss it off. I will tell you this one other story that another friend of mine, Jim Hagopian, another photographer, there was a huge project for Mattel Toys. And we went in, we were hired by another company, and then somehow the company got shifted to a different company. So we had to go in and prove ourselves to this new company that we were capable of doing this. There was so much work that they needed to have the two photographers. And I have a huge amount of experience in 4x5 and large format and product. And Jim had some experience in it. So during the course of this meeting, the client kept talking to Jim. He wouldn't even look at me. And I would say something and he would glance in my direction and then look back at Jim and continue to talk to Jim and ask questions and never really addressed me directly. And at one point he kept talking about how much 4x5 work there was going to have to be and looking at Jim. And Jim said, "You really need to talk to Bobby about that because she's the one that's got the vast amount of experience with the 4x5. And he glanced at me and then he looked back at Jim and he said, "Didn't you go to Art Center College of Design?" And Jim said, "Yes." And he goes, "Oh, then you know how to work a 4x5. So we walked out of there and walked across the street and got a cup of coffee, Jim and I, and sat down and we looked at each other and said, "We're not going to work for this guy. There's no way." I mean, Jim was the first person to say that. Again, he was totally into, you know, equality. And he said, "I have never seen anybody treat anybody so disrespectfully before. You know, we're not going to do this job." And I said, "Absolutely not. You know, I don't care what they offer us now. We're not going to work for somebody like this." So, you know, things like that happened a lot, and it's just kind of like, oh, well, I go on.
When did you feel, like looking back at that time up to now, when did you feel that things really started to change significantly?
I would say in the 90s. Beginning maybe, nah, you know what, I was going to say the late 80s, but I don't think that's true. I think it's more like the mid to the late 90s is when I think it stopped being anything that I would even consider would be something would come up with a client. Definitely by the early 2000s, I didn't really find any problems. Every once in a while, I'd run across something, but most of the time, I would say by the late 90s, things had really switched. And as I mentioned in my teaching, by the early 2000s, and I'm still teaching lighting, I'm teaching very technical stuff. By the early 2000s is when I really started to see more women taking the classes. And I would say by 2002, 2003, it was not uncommon that half of the class would be female and the other half would be male, obviously. And then from there, it became even more so. I think the average is probably around 60%. I would say in general, 60% of my classes are female. And it's not unusual. I've had many classes that have been all female.
I think that things really changed. And also we talked about it before we recorded on the air. For me as a modern man, I don't even have no idea of what kind of struggle you went to, because for me, it's just normal that in any undertaking, and in this case, in artistic undertakings, gender is not the determining factor. So I was wondering, the women who come into your classes these days, do you explain them how much work was done actually to get to the point? Is it necessary to remind them?
You know, it's a very interesting question, and I've thought a lot about this. My immediate reaction is no. I am very happy that the world is the way that it is now and that these young women don't have to go through this struggle because it is fully and totally accepting. I'm sure that they are well aware that men and women are still not completely equal in the marketplace, and I'm sure that it's occurred to them somewhere along the line that things must have changed. However, I don't want to be, well, back in the old days, we had to struggle and do this and, you know, look what a pioneer I am. I really don't feel that way. I am extremely happy that I don't have to think about it anymore, and that the young people who are coming up, male or female, that they don't have to think about it anymore. It's a non-issue. It's a non-issue really most of the time, except for photojournalism. It's the photojournalists.
Yeah, that's something you mentioned in your article. I actually know a few female photojournalists, and I absolutely admire them because they do things and go to places where a lot of our male colleagues might doubt to do so. Could you just explain why it is in photojournalism that you see that women are underrepresented?
There are some fantastic women photojournalists out there. I mean, really, truly, and I think that they have a lot of passion for what they do. I think the problem is still, it still is the throwback, is that editors or clients are thinking about the danger factor, and that women, maybe they're not quite as physically as strong as men, but I think that if a photojournalist was to be captured behind the enemy lines, you know, doing something in some country that is really, you know, anti-USA, if a male photojournalist is captured, he's probably not going to be raped. If a female photojournalist is captured, she could very well be raped. And I think that is an issue. And that has nothing to do with the clients. That has to do with the backward thinking of small people in positions of power. And you know, something that really obviously it's a worldwide problem. I don't think it's necessary to photojournalists. But I think that that's part of it. And I still think that in the photojournalism world, I still think there might be somewhat of an old boys network, along with a lot of the sports. There's not as many female sports photographers. You know, most people think that men are into sports, although look at all the female sportscasters we have. It still is. I think that those two areas are primarily where the biggest struggle still exists. I mean, look at National Geographic. They send female photographers around the world in dangerous situations and, you know, all the time. There's some outstanding people that are out there. So it's not the quality of the work. It's a little bit of the old boy network, and I think a little bit of a fear of safety.
Yeah, what comes to my mind is Amy Vitale, for example, that I had a chance to meet last year. And I think her work is just amazing and tremendous.
She's stunning, yes.
But in that field, do you see as well that things are like getting more equal as time goes on?
I am. I think that mostly it's way better than it used to be. I don't think it's gone yet, because I think there are still older people who are out there who are hiring, who are in the position of hiring, and that still probably have some leftover misogyny, or just, you know, believing that men are better, or whatever, wherever it comes from. But I think in general, it's not that way anymore. I don't think that most editors or art directors or designers are hiring somebody based upon that, like, a man's vision is going to suit this better than a female vision. Because, as I mentioned in the article, has anybody ever been able to look at a photograph and say a man shot that or a woman shot that?
Definitely not, at least not to my understanding.
No.
Hello, Fuji lovers. My name is Tomasz. I am the founder and editor of the Fuji Life magazine. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode of the podcast. I just wanted to drop another quick but very sincere thank you to our sponsors, Alien Skin Software, makers of my personal favorite photo editing software, Exposure X3. Make sure you check it out. They don't require any subscription. You can also download a 30 days free trial and test it for yourself. When it comes to editing Fujifilm X-Files, Exposure does really an excellent job, and the team behind it devotes much effort and much time to make the Fujifilm RAW conversion right. I really, really love the results coming out of this application. With the latest complete workflow update, they added support to even more Fujifilm cameras and lenses and new Fujifilm simulation presets. This update is free to current owners of Exposure X3. Download the free trial of Exposure from alienskin.com and use the coupon code FUJILOVE to save 10% when purchasing it.
I do street photography workshops, and I always have about 50% women, which I think is a great thing. And yesterday, after we finished, we actually left the location and had a discussion amongst a round about 50-year-old woman, male of the same age, myself, and a really young woman. And we asked, like, is it still difficult for a woman to progress in photography? And they all said no, but they agreed on the fact that a woman always has to deliver double the quality or do double the effort to be recognized. Do you see that as a fact?
I think in some areas that's probably true. And again, I'm going to say this off the cuff because I don't really have any statistics in front of me, but I would venture to say that men still get paid more than women do for the same job in photography. Mm-hmm. I think that that people feel that they can manipulate a woman on the business practices. That's another thing that I've always been a huge advocate of, making sure that photographers understand their rights and they do good business practices and have contracts and have everything in writing and, you know, take care of all of that. But I think that that still comes across, that sometimes there are people who are, they're not paying the same. So whether it's the quality of work that they expect them to do more or work longer or provide more images for the same amount of money, or they just don't pay the same, I think that that probably still does exist somewhat.
You represent the strong women that we need in order to change things, and I'm sure you have no regrets the way I hear you, but looking back, do you think there was ever a point where things have either not been given to you or taken away that you kind of think we would have wished it would have been different?
Oh absolutely. As I said, there's a whole lot of jobs that I didn't get that I knew I was qualified for, that, and I don't know why I didn't get them. But I have no doubt. And I have, as I said, I have many stories, and I have many other female photographer friends, and we have sat down and compared stories as well. And not just in the business sense, but there's also been, you know, I haven't really run up against this too much, but some of my female friends have, where editors have propositioned them or expected them. It's kind of like the casting couch. You know, it's like, if you want to get this job, or we're going to go away together and shoot this job, and so, you know, we're going to share a hotel room. You know, that definitely existed, and it probably still does to some extent. I'm very grateful for the Me Too movement, because I think that's all coming out in the open now. However, I have never said anything to anybody about this, and I'm going to tell you, there was a time when I was in photography school that I wished that I was a man. Because I thought that I would be able to go to more dangerous places and do things, and that nobody would know, or nobody would care about that, because I was a man, and that also I wouldn't have to worry about somebody either coming on to me or thinking that I couldn't do the job, and that I wished that I had been born a man as a photographer. And this is, I'm talking about when I was maybe 19 years old, 19 or 20 years old. That didn't last very long. I didn't feel that way for very long, but it did occur to me.
Which is, I mean, respectfully, a sad story, because it means you've been put under pressure to a degree where you actually start to a degree wishing you were somebody else. That's quite tragic to me that you've been pushed to that point.
Yes, and I'm really glad I am me. And I'm very glad I'm female. So that, as I said, that didn't last long, but it did occur to me, because it was, you could just see it, that it was going to be much more of a struggle. This is another little aside to this, is that when I was first leaving Boston, when I decided to leave Boston, I wanted to go out on my own, and it was either going to be New York City or California. And I went to New York armed with references from Bill and with people that Bill knew in New York. And I went to see a very famous photographer, a very famous commercial photographer. And he told me point blank that he wouldn't hire me because he didn't believe that I could carry all the equipment. And I said, well, you can call Bill and ask him, because Bill doesn't carry anything. I carry the 4x5 and the tripods and the lights, and I do all of this because, you know, he has to talk to the client, work with the client. That's why I'm there. And he said, it doesn't matter. He said, it doesn't matter, because the client would be looking at me saying, why aren't you helping that girl carry the gear? And he said, and clients aren't going to like that. And he said, I don't care how talented you are or anything else. He said, I have to myself work, and I have to protect myself from my client's point of view. And I ran into that in California as well. However, I don't want to tell you this photographer's name, but he ended up being one of the very first big photographers in New York to start hiring female assistants. Mm-hmm. So he came around fairly quickly. But I did run into that with male photographer friends in California who were largely location photographers, and they said their clients are like, why aren't you helping her carry that big heavy tripod?
It's funny that it's always kind of reduced. At least what people communicate to you is that they have doubts about your physical strength, while actually this goes way deeper than just not being able to carry something.
Yes, absolutely.
There's one point in your article that I love a lot. I mean, you take in four of your favorite female photographers and let them make statements about the subject. And they all kind of share my point of view as well. And I was glad to read that. Do you see any strengths in male or female photography outside of all we've discussed now?
There's a certain amount that I agree with, and I'm not sure, I can't remember who was it that said this, but I think it was Debbie Fleming Caffery, that she noticed that in her workshops that women would spend more time getting to know their subject. They'd be a little bit more attentive, pay more attention, where men would have a tendency to kind of like run in and then run out again. I don't know that that's good or bad, because I certainly have done things where I've run in and run out again, and I've seen men spend plenty of time with their subjects, paying attention to that. So I think that that might be a little bit of the innate gender nature, you know, the difference, you know, the Mars and Venus kind of thing. Mm-hmm. However, I think as photographers, I really don't think that people have a different point of view with a few things. And I did mention this in the article. I mean, there still are plenty of men out there who are doing, you know, pinup photography. And I'm being very kind in saying that. That's not really what I mean. I mean that they're very sexist. They're doing beautiful images of beautiful women and making them look as though they're sexual objects. And, you know, women can do that too. I think sometimes it's just too much. It's like, do the women's breasts need to be that bare for it to be sexual? Do we need to do, it's like, it's over the top. And I've questioned some people on Facebook. I've gotten involved in a couple conversations with men on Facebook who post these images, and they're beautiful. They're beautifully done. But I think that still bothers me, that there is that. And I don't know that that's so much, well, yeah, it is a man's point of view. That's definitely a man's point of view. And I think that in women, in the current crop of the young women who are coming up, you see a lot of more dreamlike images, you know, composites of ideas and dreams. And I don't know that men want to open up to that kind of vulnerability that comes out of the dreams, that women are more willing to be vulnerable. It's just a vision of this a little bit. But I have seen men do the same thing, and I've seen women do the same thing, and vice versa. So, you know, I don't think it's necessarily typecast. I think it really is more individual people, which is what Karen Kuhn, she didn't even mention the male-female thing. She just talked about point of view.
True.
Totally an individual point of view. And does gender play a role? Well, maybe it does with your upbringing. Boys play with trucks more than girls play with trucks, and boys play with dolls a little bit, and girls play with trucks a little bit. It still is there, but there still is predominantly a little bit of gender bias. And I'm sure that some of that comes along, but as photographers, what are we doing? We're visual communicators. We're trying to get an idea across without words, without sound. Mm-hmm. So how do we do that? What is it that we're trying to say? And that's really where the point of view comes in. What are we trying to say? What's the concept? What's the idea that's coming across? And that's purely individual.
I 100% agree. And by looking at images, you might have a guess if it was a woman or a man. But in the end, all that counts is the quality of the image. I thought the quote of Claire Rosen quite good. She said in your article, "Will gender play a role? Of course. But how it plays a role be entirely determined by who you are. And it will not be so simply reduced to having a woman's eye versus a male eye." I completely agree with that.
Yes, actually, I had long conversations with Claire, and she could have written the article. she could have written 15 pages on this herself, and we talked about this. But I thought that she, in that quote of hers, that she pretty well summed it up, is that it isn't simple. It isn't simple to say a man's eye or a woman's eye. Is there really a difference? And if so, you know, how do you fine tune it? I still come back to the fact that, really, if you look at a photograph, can you say a man shot that or a woman shot that? It's like looking at a picture saying, oh, that was shot with a Canon. That was shot with a Fuji. You can't tell that.
Exactly. That's the thought that came into my mind before. It's a similar kind of subject. It's actually totally irrelevant when it comes to being artistic.
It is. It is irrelevant.
Let me quote Karen Houghton. I met her a year ago in New York, and I think she's a great woman. And she has...
Yeah, she's a dynamo.
Yes, and incredibly inspiring things to say. And her approach was, as I quote her from the article, "I've always pretty much gone out and done my thing. Usually I would make myself so good at something so I could not be ignored."
Isn't that great?
That's a great quote. And I believe today this is even independently from being a man or a woman. This is just the way to go.
It always has been, but people seem to forget that. I think it's really important. I just came from a conference, and Brian Smith, who is an editorial and celebrity photographer based out of Miami, but he's a Pulitzer Prize winner from the 80s. He was a photojournalist, and I teach my classes this, but he said it, that it doesn't make any difference what the job is. You should treat every job as though this is the best job you are ever going to do in your life. And with my students, I tell them, when I'm giving you an assignment in class, you can go out and do the assignment and you can do a lousy job just so that you can get the assignment done. So what are you doing? You're practicing being a lousy photographer. Why don't you practice being a good photographer? Mm-hmm. And the more you practice being a good photographer, the better photographer you're going to be. And I literally, whatever I do, every job I do can't be the best thing I've ever done in my life. That's absolutely impossible. However, I always approach it with that attitude. What is the best that I can do? How can I make this better? How can I take this one step further to be able to get my idea across, to be able to make it artistically and creatively and conceptually challenging and interesting to my viewer? So that's it. Step up. Make it so good that you can't be ignored.
I totally agree with that, and I would immediately sign that statement on any kind of paper. That's the only way to go.
Yes.
Now let's quickly look into you also, which I thought was also a great idea. You asked male photographers as the bottom line. Also, you had four male photographers giving their point of view on that subject. You told me about this off the air before. Tell us a little bit how this came together and who those men are.
Well, I think I put it out to about six male photographer friends of mine, and only three wrote back to me. I actually didn't ask Lee, my husband, because I thought that would probably be a little unfair to be asking my husband to do this. But because I only had three people write back, I did have Lee write something, which I thought was also, it fit in really well with this. One of the other photographers wrote back to me and sincerely apologized. And he had been on the road and was just unable to be able to get to this in the time of the deadline, because I was asking people for this about 4 days before the deadline. So, he couldn't get back to me. And then I never heard anything from the other two. No response to it at all. And these are all people who are friends of mine, who are really excellent photographers. And I quite honestly, I don't know. They might also have been on the road. I know that both of them are on the road a lot, and maybe they didn't get it. They didn't see it. I'm not sure. But I really would have liked to have had more male photographers respond to this.
I believe that amongst my male photographer friends, I think they all share my and in that case our point of view, which I'm actually glad that it is. So do you still encounter this kind of dinosaurs in terms of worldview these days, or do they not exist anymore?
Well, I'm sure that they exist. I just don't seek them out.
Do you run into them?
I'm not gonna go looking for them. You know, I'm so involved in photographic education, and that's between the workshops that I teach. I do presentations at camera clubs. I'm involved with organizations. And of course, all the people that you surround yourself with are more likely going to be people who think like you. So I don't really run into it. I certainly have no problem being hired by companies that are male run, that want me to come and do all the environmental portraits of their executives to go onto their website or to do their corporate identity brochures. I have plenty of male clients, so I don't run into it. That doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. I'm sure that it does. I'm sure it isn't over yet, and I'm sure there's people out there who are still running into it, whether it's blatant or not. I mean, as I said before, lots of times I didn't know. I have other stories of when it was blatant, but there's plenty of times when it's not. So, you know, you really don't know. But I think that still, you know, even though I've been shooting professionally for now over 40 years, a lot of the people who are my age or older are still hiring people, and they may still have the old-fashioned feeling, although they are definitely really in the minority at this point.
As you teach a lot of women, if you give them one advice going forward to be successful female photographers, what is it?
Learn business.
Yeah, that's good. And that's not even gender specific. That's just the total truth in the business of photography.
That's true of everybody. I think, you know, there is this thing. I think that still that women are still raised to be a certain way, that there still is, it's not gone yet from the family environment of saying that, you know, women are supposed to, you know, be at home with the babies and take care of this and that, and that the men are the business people and go out there. So I think a lot of women actually have less business sense or less security about business. I do private mentoring with people, and I have probably equal amounts of men and women that I work with. Almost all the women are afraid to talk about money, and almost all the men are not. Mm-hmm. So it is good advice for everybody to learn business, but I think it's really important for women to learn business and to understand that by saying that these are the rights, here's the contract, everything is spelled out, this is the money, this is how you're going to pay me, and just have it be very clear and upfront, I still find that more women have a problem with that than men do. And I wish that I had more business experience when I started out, because I pretty much learned by the seat of my pants. I learned by doing and failing and making horrible mistakes and getting screwed over by people. So, you know, that's important. The obvious things, obviously, you have to learn your craft. You have to understand your concepts. You have to learn all of that stuff. That's a given. But if you want to do this as a living, if you want to make a living as this, and it's actually not even really a living, it's a lifestyle. It's a way of life. Mm-hmm. I don't turn off at 5 o'clock and I'm not a photographer anymore. But having that business sense is going to help people really in the long run be able to thrive and still to be able to have families and to take time off if they need to and to be able to buy and to plan for retirement and to take care of their kids and do all of that. But if you don't have a good business sense, then you're going to find yourself completely lost somewhere along the line and out of business because you didn't do good business practices.
That's great advice. And I just realized that we could actually talk for a long time, but slowly running out of time. Now,
yes,
as we are on the Fuji Love podcast, I have to ask you, what is your favorite Fuji gear? I noticed one thing when I looked through your gallery on the ex-photographer's homepage. We seem to have the same kind of love for the 56 1.2.
Oh, yes.
But otherwise, what kind of gear do you have from the Fuji side?
Well, I have the X-T2. The X-T2 and the 56 1.2 are my favorite combination of camera and lens that I've ever used in my life. They're kind of like glued to me. Although I certainly use, I have all kinds of lenses. I have so many different kinds of lenses and I do use them all. The 90 as a portrait photographer is fantastic because at F2, even at F2, what's in focus is incredibly sharp, but that beautiful bokeh that you get in the background is fantastic. That was the cover shot with the woman from Carnival dressed in the white and the gold backlit. That was, I had just gotten the 90 like a week before I took that picture. So I love the 90. I love what that does. You know, I have the X-T1, I have the X-T10, I have the X-T20, I have the X-100F. My husband has a bunch of cameras as well. And then between the two of us, we have really a wide array of lenses. But I would say that I use the lenses that I use the most are the medium zoom, the 2.8, and the 56. Those are the ones that are, if I go out with my camera bag and just take those two lenses, I can do just about anything else that I would want to do. The 90 would probably be next in my bag. And then I'm going to go to either end on the zooms. I'm going to go to the long zoom and to the short zoom, the 10 to 24. So, but really that medium zoom 2.8 is just amazingly fantastic and great for me. I mean, I'm not a street shooter per se, but I do a lot of travel. It's great for the travel because it's still, since it zooms to 55, it still is good for a portrait. But if I'm really going to work the portraits, then I want to go to the 1.2 because of the sharpness and that fabulous lack of depth of field that is so beautiful.
We're on the same page there. If my house ever burns, besides my computer, I'll grab the 56 and the X-T2.
Yes.
On a quick note, if you could wish or put any wishes to Fujifilm for future models, what would you address?
Well, we actually have kind of put this out before, and it's only come out in one way. I love infrared. We had an old X-T2 converted to infrared. I would love them to put out an infrared camera that is for public use. They do have one, but it's only for forensic. It's only going to policemen and firemen, and you know, it's only for forensic use. So that would be something that I would really truly love to see. Other than that, you know, I don't really shoot like wildlife, so you know, having like a super long zoom doesn't really mean anything to me. Everything else that they have, I'm happy with. I love the X-T2. I love the way that it feels in my hands. I've only touched the H1X so far. I haven't really held it to play with it very much. So I'm curious about that. Although it is a little bigger and heavier, I know that Lee likes it because the hand grip is a little bigger. So I think that it feels stronger to him in his hand. But I'm happy. I'm really happy with what I have right now. I just love it. I love that, you know, the quality of the lenses and the sensor. I always say that I'm number one in the Fuji cult.
Okay, great. I mean, I had a chance, by the way, to play with the XH1 for a while now. And what I really love is the speed of the autofocus. And I'm looking forward to see that in the future models.
Yes, actually that, and there are a couple things about that. The body stabilization, I think, is amazing. And also the brighter viewfinder, I think, is great as well. All those things. I think they were all really smart improvements to make.
I agree. And as we know, Fuji, we know that these improvements might come to the future models. So we're looking forward to that.
Yes, absolutely.
Before we end, do you have any projects or any things coming up on your side that you want to share?
I have, well, let's see. There's personally, I'm working on, you know, I shoot real people is what I always say. And I am working on doing a series of environmental portraits as simply as possible, trying to go in and do things with very simple lighting, but really do creative interpretive portraits of people. And I have several people lined up right now. I have a painter. We live in Carver, Mass, which is where cranberries are grown. And there's an old couple. They're they're like 82 or 83, and they've owned this cranberry farm for a long time. And I want to photograph them. I have a lot of musician friends. I think I mentioned that earlier. I have a couple of people that I've got lined up that I want to really do some creative portraits on, just because, you know, I love people and all that. On the travel scene, I do with another ex-photographer, David Nightingale, out of Britain. He and I and Fabio Tian, we run a trip for Venice Carnival every year. And my husband, Lee Varis, he's the extra added bonus. So we do that every year. But this just came up, and this is also related to Fuji. Ken Kamininski, who is also a travel photographer and runs travel tours, we are right now working with him to go to Tanzania at the end of August for, the Serengeti, the Maasai, the big game, and the wildebeest migration. So that's going to be amazing. That's going to be absolutely amazing. We normally do two or three or four travel trips a year. The only other travel trip we have is we have a trip to Iceland at the end of September. I have one spot left. Otherwise, we only take seven people, so there's only one spot left on that one.
So whoever wants to go to Iceland with you needs to move fast.
They do.
Now, where can we see your work online? Where can we find you?
BobbyLane.com. BobbyLane.com.
Great. This was such an inspiring conversation. And everybody who hasn't read the Fuji Love magazine with the women in photography in focus, please do so, because you're going to see a lot of interesting angles, aspects, and primarily really good photographers. Any last words you want to share with the Fuji Love community, Bobby?
I think that the most important thing that I can tell people is to shoot with intention, with heart, and to really understand the essence of your subject, whether it's a street shot or a landscape or a person, but to really get to the essence of that and understand that, so that then you can use all your tools and techniques to be able to really bring that out. Because it comes back to, again, we are communicators. It doesn't make any difference whether you're male or female. It's what are you communicating, and being really clear about the essence of that. That's the most important advice I can give anybody.
I have nothing to add to that. Thanks a lot, Bobby.
Thank you, Jens. This was wonderful.
Thank you for listening to the Fuji Love Podcast. Stay up to date with Fuji Love. Follow our Facebook page and join the Fuji Love Facebook Readers Group. Head over to www.fujilove.com for all the necessary information. Take good care, and we will talk to you next time.